Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The UN Security Council has condemned North Korea for firing an intermediate-range ballistic missile over Japan, calling it an outrageous act, demanding Pyongyang abandon its missile and nuclear programs. Nikki Haley is the U.S. UN ambassador.
All 15 members of the Security Council have spoken in unison. All of us. The United States, Japan, China, Russia, Europeans, Africans, South Americans. We are all together.
Japan's Ambassador Koro Besho said he hopes the 15-member council will follow up their statement with a strong resolution, perhaps containing new sanctions. Wednesday, North Korea said it conducted the test as a response to ongoing joint U.S.-South Korean military exercises, which it views as a prelude to invasion, and to contain the U.S. Pacific Island territory of Guam, where a U.S. base is located. Leader Kim Jong-un also warned of more missiles over Japan, calling Tuesday's launch a curtain raiser. The Atlantic Council's Robert Manning said Pyongyang's actions were carefully thought out.
They try to calibrate these things so it's just below the threshold where the U.S. is likely to respond. And so by firing it over to Japan, he sends a message that he can hit U.S. forces without going towards Guam, where President Trump has threatened to respond.
The president said Pyongyang's message was received loud and clear. He says such a threatening and destabilizing action only increases the North Korean regime's isolation. The body of an American journalist killed in fighting between government and rebel forces in South Sudan was handed over Tuesday to the U.S. Embassy in Juba. The Army's chief medical officer, Dr. Peter Ajak Bullen, was on hand. The American, identified as 26-year-old Christopher Allen, killed Saturday along with 18 others. This is VOA News. President Trump Tuesday visited Texas to survey the damage and widespread flooding caused by Tropical Storm Harvey. One of his first stops was the coastal city of Corpus Christi, where he described the storm as being of epic proportion.
We love you. You are special. We're here to take care. It's going well. And I want to thank you for coming out. We're going to get you back and operating immediately. Thank you, everybody. What a crowd. What a turnout.
Some communities received more than 130 centimeters of rain in the past 4 days. One-third of Harris County, where the city of Houston is located, is underwater. At least 10 people have died, including a family of six, in storm-related incidents. Thousands more have sought emergency shelter. The economic cost has been put in the tens of billions of dollars. There are public health challenges as well, says Dr. Samuel Dorovich of the University of Illinois.
The concerns extend to mosquitoes and the diseases they carry when standing water is available, especially in containers. Mental health is a concern. Mold growing in damaged homes is a concern.
Harvey expected to dump heavy rains on neighboring Louisiana Wednesday, which bore the brunt of Hurricane Katrina in 2005. That killed 1,800 and caused $118 billion in damage before moving to the interior, impacting Arkansas, Tennessee, and parts of Missouri. Authorities in Saudi Arabia Tuesday said they expect more than 2 million Muslim pilgrims for this week's Hajj to Islam's holiest sites. The Saudi Interior Minister is Major General Mansour al-Turki.
There are more than 100,000 policemen on ground in Mecca al-Mukarramah and al-Masha'ir, doing different duties, actually, to serve pilgrims, to look after them, after their security, after their safety, and to assist them with anything they would require to ensure that they perform Hajj safely and comfortably.
The Hajj gets underway Wednesday. 2 years ago, a stampede caused nearly 2,300 fatalities. Venezuela's pro-government new constituent assembly has announced it will hold treason trials for opposition members believed backing U.S. sanctions. It did not identify any potential defendants. Last week, the White House announced tough new financial sanctions targeting funds flowing to President Nicolas Maduro's government, as well as the state-owned oil company. U.S. stocks ended in positive territory Tuesday after recovering losses triggered by uncertainties over tensions on the Korean Peninsula. The benchmark Dow Jones Index, which fell more than 130 points at the opening, gained nearly 57 points to close at 21,865. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voice of America, I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Who petrol-bombed the headquarters of the Alliance Democratic Party of Sierra Leone?
Honestly, my suspicion is folks from the ruling government. Because, like I said, the day before, I was on Sierra Leone Broadcasting Service, the SLBC, radio and television, where I condemned this government and their failed activities.
Mohamed Kamaraimba Massare is the leader of the Alliance Democratic Party of Sierra Leone. But a Sierra Leone government spokesman says Massare is not a threat to the government. We'll talk with the president of the Liberian community in Houston about the impact of Hurricane Harvey. And where's Diane Rigara of Rwanda?
I heard that the police came and they took them, all of them. I don't know where they took them, if it's in CID or DMI, I don't know yet. But that's all I know, that the police came and took them.
Tabitha Gwiza is the aunt of former presidential candidate Diane Rigara of Rwanda. The IOM says there has been no migrant deaths in the past 20 days. And a newly released compilation from Somalia's golden age of music. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The leader of the opposition Alliance Democratic Party of Sierra Leone, the ADP, says the ruling All People's Congress Party, APC, was behind the early Tuesday morning petrol bomb that destroyed the ADP's headquarters in downtown Freetown. Mohamed Kamaraimba Massare, once a member of the APC, was jailed in June this year for unlawfully possessing a stun gun. But Massare tells me the APC is behind the petrol bombing of his headquarters because he had been critical lately of what he calls the government's failed policies.
I received a call the early hours of this morning indicating that the headquarters of our office, the Alliance Democratic Party, is being gutted and is on fire. So I rushed to the scene. I met some of the officials there. And some reports indicated that a petrol bomb was sent at the building. And apparently the whole two-story building that we occupied went down and everything was burnt down.
Did you report this to the police? And what did the police say?
I went to the CID and made a report. And subsequently the police investigated the matter. But the irony here, according to them, they cannot go in the building till after 24 hours. I don't know what protocol is that. This is not the first time that the Alliance Democratic Party has been attacked. There's two more instances. This is what's going on in this country right now. We don't have no protection, especially me being the voice or the voiceless now in this country and being serving as the main opposition. There's no protection for us.
Mr. Massare, you broke away from the ruling APC party and founded your party. Currently, we understand that you have a court case. Can you tell us about that court case?
Yes. According to the matter, the police came and arrested me June 1st, saying that I was in possession of a stun gun. I was sent to prison for a week, and I got bail. And then went back 2 weeks after that. They dropped and discharged all the three charges, initial charges, and brought a new charge again, one new charge. And after that, I was sent to prison the same day for another week. And the new charge is also possession of a stun gun flashlight. And we came to realize in themselves that I'm a leader. I don't hold a bulky flashlight stun gun with me. I have private securities around me all the time, and I went to the police that day, the day they alleged that I was in possession, and requested for police protection. They gave me an armed OSD, a police, to be with me all day. And so how can I hold a stun gun while an armed police officer was with me all the day? I believe it's just a ploy because some of the police superintendent who happened to be Kreskov Kagbo, in front of my Secretary General and other witnesses, openly said that the vice president, Victor Fo, ordered my arrest.
Whenever there's fire, there's always suspicion around the people who own the facilities where the fire occur. Do you have any suspicion in terms of whether anybody associated with you might be responsible, or do you suspect any other person?
Honestly, my suspicion is folks from the ruling government, because, like I said, the day before, I was on Sierra Leone Broadcasting Service, the SLBC, radio and television, where I condemned this government and their failed activities, and that even the flawed victims, the donations and we received internationally, which is about $15 million, this government cannot handle and manage those funds. What they did, they went and secured the services of an international agency, which are going to be paid by DFID. So to me, they are not responsible government. That action alone is a testament to tell the people of this country that they failed the country and they cannot be trusted. So those are the issues that I was bringing on board the day before when my office was sent ablaze today.
Mohamed Kamal Raimba Massare is leader of the Alliance Democratic Party of Sierra Leone. He was speaking with me from the capital of Freetown. A spokesman for the ruling All People's Congress, APC party of Sierra Leone, is denying allegations that members of the party were behind the petrol bomb that destroyed the headquarters of the opposition Alliance Democratic Party, ADP, early Tuesday morning. Abdoulaye Birete, spokesman for President Ernest Bai Koroma, says ADP leader Mohamed Kamal Raimba Massare is a disgraced former member of the ruling APC and is therefore no threat to the party. Birete says the government is concentrating for now on entrenching democracy in Sierra Leone.
Whenever we have fire outbreaks in Sierra Leone, two agencies are usually immediately contacted. We have the Sierra Leone Fire Force, and they are doing preliminary investigations after helping to put out the fire, as well as the Criminal Investigation Department. I think it is both unfortunate and preposterous for anybody to insinuate that a fire disaster of this nature at the heart of the city will be done by anybody, not least a ruling party. In fact, when the fire happened, I personally called Mohamed Kamarimba Mansari to sympathize with the situation. And of course, I inquired from him. He said he has already been called by the Criminal Investigation Department after he made a report, and that the fire force is investigating. I even went further on a personal note to say if you want any support, let us know. So it is unfortunate that after even having engaged him on that, he will still go and make some insinuation that he suspected the All People's Congress Party. He is not a threat to our party. He is making a lot of noise. He was part of the All People's Congress Party. He came in and he was given the boot out of the party. So now he is seeing the party as a demon. But we continue to appeal to the people of this country. Based on the track record of this government, there is no way we could be berated. That is why the battles we fight, we believe in fighting through the ballot box. That is why we restore democracy in the first place and introduce a multi-party constitution in 1991, which we are using currently in Sierra Leone.
Mr. Birete, Mr. Massare is currently in court on charges of unlawful possession of a stun gun. He indicated that he thought the arrest associated with that was engineered by the vice president's office. So he kind of feels maybe he's being persecuted.
Well, you know, people can make vile allegations. But for us in Sierra Leone, one thing we pride ourselves in is the belief in the rule of law. That is why when he was arrested, the police explained to him why he was arrested, and he has got lawyers that are representing him in that court case. So as far as we are concerned as a government, we continue to concentrate in responding to the disaster of the mudslide that was met us. The court is doing its own role. That is why our constitution is modeled within the spirit of separation of powers. So we are busy with governance issues. Whatever is happening in the courts, his lawyers, the state lawyers, and the judiciary are handling that.
Bring us up to date, Mr. Birete, on that mudslide.
Now, I was reading, was it a day ago, reading an article suggesting that perhaps 1,000 people might have been killed?
Yes, we read that report as well, particularly on the social media. And that speculation cannot be debunked. From expert views that maybe we may still be having about up to 500 bodies under the rubble. Even though the recovery efforts are still ongoing, we continue to receive body parts. But the official figure of the people that we have buried stands at 499.
Abdullahi Berete, spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. He was speaking with me from the capital of Freetown. Today's Wednesday, August 30th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. The aunt of former Rwandan presidential candidate Diane Rwigara says Diane has not been heard from since early Tuesday morning. Ms. Rwigara had said she wanted to be Rwanda's first female president, but the election commission disqualified her from competing in the August 4th election because the commission said she failed to garner the required 600 signatures needed to put her name on the ballot. Now, her aunt, Tabitha Gwiza, called VOA Tuesday night to say Diane and other members of the family had been picked up by the police.
What happened? I heard that the police came and they took them, all of them. I don't know where they took them, if it's in CID or DMI. I don't know yet, but that's all I know, that the police came and took them. I have been trying to contact them since this morning, 11 a.m. Nobody responded. The mother, the children, all of them. And then finally someone told me that the police took them. That's what I know up to now. Since that time, they haven't come back yet.
So no one from the police have been able to contact any member of the family to say, well, these people are in our custody. No one has said that.
No, not yet. That's why I called you to see if you guys, you can do something about it for us, and I would appreciate it.
We will try to reach the Rwandan government. Of course, when we are making this call now, it's kind of late in Rwanda. But do you have any reason, is there any reason that you think the police might have picked her up? I know that she was denied or rejected to participate in the election. Has anything happened since then that will give any reason for her arrest?
Well, let me tell you something. Since they killed Rwigara Assinapol, the family has been going through a lot. They have been in problems causing by the government. No peace since 3 years ago. It has been going on since Assinapol Rwigara passed away.
When last did you speak to Diane or any member of the family? When last did you speak to them?
I talk to my sister every day, either WhatsApp calling or a video calling, or every single day I talk to. But since this morning, 11 o'clock, I tried nothing. Nothing happened. I couldn't talk to her.
So how do you know the police picked them up? Did you speak to someone else in Kigali?
Yes, I did. Someone told me that the police took them. That's all he told me. He did not have any more information. That's what he knew. He told me that the police came and took them. Since then, they still there. They don't know what's going on up to now.
Tabitha Gwiza is the aunt of former Rwandan presidential candidate Diane Rwigara. She was speaking with me from Windsor, Canada. Neither the Rwandan police nor a spokesperson for the government were immediately available for comment. The International Organization for Migration, the IOM, says no migrants have died while crossing the Mediterranean Sea over the past 20 days. It says migrant fatalities in general appear to be on the decline. Lisa Schlein reports from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
The central Mediterranean Sea route from Libya to Italy is much favored by African migrants who risk their lives on smugglers' boats desperate to reach Europe. While this route might become a gateway to a better life for some, it also is notorious for taking the lives of many. The International Organization for Migration reports a total of 2,410 Mediterranean Sea fatalities this year. IOM spokesman Leonard Doyle says it is remarkable to go without a single reported death for 20 days. He acknowledges it is very hard to know exactly why.
The flows from Libya have diminished. If you recall, in July there were days when 3,000 people were picked up in one weekend. You remember that? And now we have very, very few. So something's happening. We're not sure what's behind it all. We see somewhat of a decline of the migrant flows coming in from Niger, but not enough to justify or to explain why the flows across the Mediterranean have gone down.
IOM data show the number of fatalities on the Mediterranean Sea generally has declined. Just 19 deaths have been recorded across the region this month, which is a sharp drop from the 689 recorded in August 2015 and 62 last year. Doyle says no deaths for 20 days might be a cause for celebration. He warns, though, this number can easily go up as smugglers continue to prey on vulnerable migrants, risking their lives while exploiting them for profit. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The sun came out in Houston late Tuesday for the first time since Hurricane Harvey slammed into Texas last Friday. But the problems in the rain-soaked city, the fourth largest in the United States, are not going away. The storm is believed to be responsible for the deaths of at least 9 people, and preliminary damage estimates have ranked up as high as $100 billion. Yanwulu Sawon is president of the Liberian Association of Greater Houston, comprising about 8,000 Liberians. He says his association has been trying to deliver food and other essentials to members of the Liberian community in the area.
As a matter of fact, right now, my wife and I were in my car taking personal disaster relief from our community to some members of ours. They were stuck. The boats are not getting to them because things are being prioritized and because we are not those people that are hit by over 12 feet of water. So they are second in line. But nevertheless, they are in dire straits. Some of our Liberians here have been hit with high water. Those in two-story buildings, their first floors have been flooded. First thing we did as a community, we sent out the relief numbers. They called the relief numbers, and they were lucky enough, and those people have been released and taken to shelters.
A friend sent me a text saying that they went to work, and they have not been able to return home for several days now. I mean, how are people making it just to go to the store to get the basic things that people need to survive?
What we did about that Thursday, when we got news that we were going to get hit, we, as the Liberian organization, we sent out text messages by mass text. We had our website loaded, and we informed our constituents, for lack of a better word, to be prepared. Yes, we do have a lot of Liberians who are stuck at work. They've been stuck there since Thursday. So what has been happening is we try to be interconnected as best as possible. So it is people helping people. As a matter of fact, our motto here for our organization is, we are all in this as one. That is how we work with one another. Like I told you, me personally, I've been delivering food, eggs, bread, and water to other families who couldn't make it on Friday night.
This is rainy season in parts of, West Africa and Liberia in particular, rainy season. How would you compare the rain you are getting in the Texas Houston area with the rain that people get in, West Africa, the tropical rain?
I can speak directly to Liberia because that's where I hail from, of course. And all my life in Liberia, I never, ever experienced what we're going through here. Imagine this is supposed to be our first world. We are a third world country. We've never experienced anything like this. It rains for 2 days in a row and got high water all over. I don't know whether it is a drainage system or the water here just is heavier than Liberia, but no. In no time did we ever get flooded all my days in Liberia, except, of course, sudden rain, and that's it. But here, if it rains for 2 days and it's about to get ready, it's 2 days straight, you're going to get flooded. And it is terrible. The cars can't get anywhere. We resort to boats. And if you don't have a boat, then you have to wait for relief. It is terrible. It is scary. It is sad.
Yamwulu Sawan is president of the Liberian Association of Greater Houston. He was speaking with me from Houston, Texas. A newly released compilation of music from Somalia's golden age of music is now available thanks to a discovery of thousands of bootlegged cassettes. Music producer Vic Sohoni led efforts to put together the LP, Sweet as Broken Dates, Lost Somali Tapes from the Horn of Africa. Sohoni talked to Ricky Stryak about how they recovered the tapes, chose the tracks, and the future of Somali music.
A lot of these cassettes were dispatched to neighboring countries like Djibouti, like Ethiopia, so on and so forth during the war to keep them safe. And a lot of them, one radio operator told us from Radio Hargeisa that the collection from the radio center's the radio station's archives, because the radio station was targeted during the war, they buried them in crates under the ground so that airstrikes couldn't destroy them. And they're still kind of bringing them out of the ground again. And they've forgotten where they've buried a lot of them as well. So these cassettes have, they've been through a lot, and I think Somalis recognize their value of them. These are almost they are cultural artifacts.
What is the compilation? How many songs? How did you narrow down the tracks you wanted to release?
The CD has 15 songs. The LP has one extra bonus track, but it's a 15-track album. There was a lot of stuff that was great, but the sound quality was so poor because of what these tapes have been through, we couldn't use it. So the first thing we had to do is make sure that we were using only stuff that, that wasn't in the worst quality. And luckily we had a lot of that. So that was the first kind of narrowing down process. And the second and the most important was, of course, looking at Somali culture, looking at the bands and the singers that Somalis revere, that Somalis loved, and making sure that we included not only, what perhaps outsiders' ears would want to hear, because there's a lot of great music that people can relate to, because there's a lot of reggae vibes, funk and soul, but also music that Somalis can celebrate. So, for example, we have a song on here, track number 13, which translates as "What's October? It's Ours," by a famous band called Waberi Band. And that song was actually a quote-unquote propaganda song. It was a song commemorating the 1969 revolution that brought Siad Barre to power. And then we also wanted to make sure that we really did justice to the entire spectrum of Somali music styles. There's so much there. Because Somalia, it's such a vast country, north to south and everything in between. Every region you go to in Somalia has a completely different style of music, completely different rhythm that's been influenced by different parts of the world.
Do you know much about the National Recovery Plan, that the National Theater is being rebuilt? And how does the modern music in Somalia reflect past styles?
The music has suffered obviously greatly because of the war, and many Somalis will tell you that the musicians today are perhaps not as good as the musicians from the 70s and 80s. That's also a bit of nostalgia speaking. Somalia, it's really interesting to see, because when you look at countries that have been through 20, 30 years of civil war, the media and everyone will tend to focus on the political rebuilding, the economic rebuilding, which is of course very important, the military settlements, things like that. But people forget that the cultural rebuilding is such an important part of rebuilding a country. It's kind of the confidence, the backbone of your country. So Somalia recognizes this, and they've, of course, not only invested greatly to restore the National Theater, but also, they're seeking investment and funding to modernize their archives, to preserve them.
That was Vic Sohoni, producer and founder of Stenato Records. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Bangkok. And that is it for this Wednesday, August 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, saying have a nice day, Africa.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.